The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 11, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to on the show today. Wednesdays are not guest heavy, but we have a guest for a lot of the show, right? Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is going to be with us again today. He'll join us coming up at 2:30, so in about 30 minutes, we'll get his thoughts on Georgia's beatdown in week two that they gave out, and then we got to talk about what was a very anticipated matchup as the Dogs hit the road this week to start SEC play, but they're taking on a Kentucky team in Lexington that just looked horrible, putrid last week against South Carolina. So we'll talk to him about that, everything else we need to know going on around Georgia athletics. And then it's Wednesday, which means it's Double D Wednesday. That's right, Daryl Dapperidge will be with us coming up in hour number two. He'll join us at 3:15-ish to 3:45-ish, okay? Really looking forward to having him on the show. We're going to get his thoughts from last week, and then Wednesdays are about flipping the page, right? We're going to flip the page with Double D and look to this weekend, and we're just going to ask him straight up, who should start at quarterback for Auburn this Saturday? We'll ask him his thoughts on that and get a full preview of what Auburn can expect to see or what we can expect to see from Auburn against New Mexico. That's coming up later in hour number two. Until Jordan Hill in about 30 minutes, though, phone lines are open. What's on your mind on this Wednesday? What do you want to talk about today? I'm curious on where you stand now, right? We're a couple of days away, or I guess a couple of days removed from what happened this past Saturday. And you got to think about it. Now, we're just a couple of days away from this Saturday. And there's a lot to feel right now, I think is the best way to say that. So phone lines are open. Get in on this. Would love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's 334-321-1390. You could call in at that number, or you can shoot me a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And I know it's Wednesday, and I hate to go back to the weekend, but I do want to give my thoughts on a couple of things that happened from this past weekend other than Auburn and Cal, okay? Because, yes, that is what a lot of us cared about in these first couple of days, and it's still a very relevant topic. But there was a lot that happened outside of this city this weekend, this past weekend, that is, and then it kind of impacts what's going on this upcoming weekend. And, man, you look around college football, right? You look around, and, I mean, you had games on Friday night. One went to double overtime. BYU-SMU was disgusting. And then you had Indiana breaking records that they haven't done, scoring 77 points. Don't think it's been done since like the early 1900s. Like, Friday was kind of crazy, right? Then you get into Saturday, and you start looking at the top teams around the country. You look at Georgia. Okay, I didn't watch the game. I'm going to be really honest with you. I didn't watch it. It was late afternoon. They played Tennessee Tech, and they won 48-3. Good for them. Carson Beck had 5 touchdowns. That's all you need to know. All right, moving on. Ohio State, same thing. 56-0 over Western Michigan. Moving on. But the game of the day, right, the game of the weekend this past weekend, College Game Day was there. Big noon kickoff was there. It was the 11 a.m. right out of the chute. Biggest game so far, matchup-wise, numbers-wise, name-wise, so far in this young college football season. It was number 3, Texas, and number 10, Michigan. And if you listen to the show on Friday, I may not have been right about a lot of my picks, but I was right about Texas. And I was right about Michigan, because I think Texas is really good, and I think Michigan is an 8-4 football team. That's just what I believe. I believed it going in, and here we are, right? Michigan looked terrible. They had 3 points in the first half. They had 9 points in the second half. It was ridiculous. It was terrible. Michigan couldn't do anything against that Texas front. And then offensively, Texas did enough, right? Some would say that Texas disappointed because they only scored 31 points. Well, I beg to differ, because that's still a really good Michigan defense, and it was on the road at the Big House, which sounded like just another stadium on Saturday, didn't it? So Texas, with the win of the year so far, it will go down as a top 10 win, but there's no shot that it finishes as a top 10 win. You feel me? Michigan's not going to be a ranked team by the end of this season. I fully believe that. So, good for Texas. They represented themselves, they represented the SEC, and they went up there and they did what they were supposed to do. You keep going down the list, and you look at number 4, Alabama. And I've yet to give my thoughts on this. Alabama wins 42-16 against South Florida. Right in the Crimson Tide, they look ahead to what comes up for them this weekend. Reminder, they're on the road at Wisconsin. And we went into this game, Alabama, Friday when we were out at Plaza Bar and Lounge. Shout out to them and Sensa Green for making that possible. We talked about this game, and going into it Friday afternoon into Saturday morning, Alabama was a 31-point favorite. Do you remember that? Alabama was a 31-point favorite. And we all said that was crazy. We said Alabama was going to win, but winning by 31 seemed like a lot. Seemed like too many points against that South Florida team. Well, it was, but not by much. Alabama ends up winning by 26, 42-16. And this is such a misleading score. We all know that, because there's a good chance if you listened to, or if you're listening to this show right now on this radio station in this town, you had this game on, right? You watched the end of this game. You did. You watched this game on Saturday night. You listened to it. You kept up with it, something. And we all know that Alabama was up by one. One. Heading into the fourth quarter. It was 14-13. Yes, they were down inside the red zone. Yes, they would go on to score. But fact of the matter is, it was 14-13 heading into the fourth quarter. And then they outscored South Florida 28-3. That's misleading. That is lack of depth on South Florida. That is a talent differential between the fourth-ranked team in the country and a South Florida team that's not even Power 4 football. That's what the difference was in that fourth quarter. But up until that point, Alabama didn't look special to me. Their two touchdowns were two rushing touchdowns by Jalen Milroe. That was it. That's all they had done. Now, South Florida couldn't do anything. Alabama's defense, I think, played pretty well. But South Florida shot themselves in the foot time and time again. Had opportunities, missed throws, turned it over. Did the things you cannot do. But just a subtle reminder, this was in Bryant-Denny. This was in Tuscaloosa. That crowd didn't do anything. That crowd had no effect. Just another stadium. Now, I think there is something to be said about finding a way to win a game like this, right? Because not everybody can say that this week. Not everybody can come out of what happened a week ago and say, you know, we didn't play our best football, but we found a way to win. And to Alabama's credit, not only did they do that, they made it look like a bloodbath by the end of it. Auburn can't say that. Auburn can't say any of that. Because Auburn did not find a way to win. So credit to Alabama. Now they go on the road to Wisconsin, a team that has not looked good through the first two weeks of the season. Alabama's favored I have not seen the updated line on that. I'll get to that in a little bit. But Alabama is not perfect. I think that's what we found out this past Saturday was they're not the almighty juggernaut that they were. They're still very talented. Very talented. But they're not perfect. And we knew that was going to be the case in year one with Kalen DeBoer, and more importantly, year one without Nick Saban. Couple of other games to highlight here. How about Notre Dame? What a joke. What a joke Notre Dame is. Number five team in the country. Okay. You let Northern Illinois not just beat you, but come in to Notre Dame and beat you. Northern Illinois, if you remember, hit a field goal, a go-ahead field goal with about 30 seconds left. Notre Dame drove down. They had one to win. They were down by two. He didn't miss it. It got blocked. Northern Illinois blocks a field goal, and they win the game, 16-14. Good job, Notre Dame. Way to go. Good thing is you didn't embarrass your conference because you don't play in one. But you had one job. Notre Dame, you had one job. Don't lose. Easier said than done, but man, you just went on the road and beat Texas A&M last week. And then you come home and you lose to a team you paid over $1 million to come there. Their schedule's a cakewalk. And now, even if they win out, there's a legitimate conversation on whether Notre Dame belongs in a playoff. We'll have to cross that bridge when we get there. But man, what does that say about Notre Dame? Or what does that say about A&M? Not so good, huh? Rest of the top 10, top 25 here quickly. Oregon struggled again with Boise State after they struggled with Idaho last week. Talked to my boy Spencer McLaughlin, who does the Locked on Ducks podcast, and he said the offensive line's just abysmal. It's terrible. He said if that comes together, Oregon's fine. But until then, Ohio State's going to run that Big Ten Conference. Penn State was losing to Bowling Green almost the entire game, came back to find a way to win it. I'm not sold on Penn State. Never have been, never will be. Missouri did their thing. Most of the top teams did. Oklahoma struggled with Houston. That was weird, huh? That was weird. And can we all agree? Can we all agree that Tennessee's probably really good? I think they're going to be good at this whole football thing this year. Oh, Nico. He can sling it now. Now, he had 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, but Tennessee put it on NC State. Reminder, though, that's an NC State team that almost lost to Western Carolina in week one. That did not look good against Western Carolina in week one. And I had Tennessee rolling in this game, but I did not see them winning 51-10. So watch out for Tennessee in the SEC. And oh my, oh, I'd forgotten. There's so many games I've forgotten about from this weekend. God, college football was drunk on Saturday, wasn't it? Unbelievable. You had Tulane, who blew it at home against number 17 Kansas State. Kansas State, the Wildcats survived. But can we all finally come to the mutual agreement to stop going to Tulane? If you're a Power 4 team, stop it. You're going to get burned. And Tulane should have won the football game. I'm just telling you. They should have, and they blew it. Illinois, unranked Illinois, ugly Illinois, beats Kansas, who's a top 20 team. Wild, man. Iowa State takes down Iowa. Syracuse beats Georgia Tech and stops the crazy comeback the Yellow Jackets were on. Clemson gets back in the win column, 66-20. But I think one of the most hectic, crazy results in college football in week two was Sam Pittman having a chance to save his job at Arkansas. He had it in his hands. He had both hands out like he was sticking them under a water faucet, and there it was. They placed the W in his hands, and he said, I'm good. And he moved him out of the way, and he dropped it. He fumbled it, and it shattered on the ground in front of him. Arkansas and Sam Pittman had 15 different chances to beat Oklahoma State on Saturday. On the road, top 20 team in Stillwater. and they lose in overtime 39-31. Double overtime. Apologies. Double overtime. Unbelievable. They were up 21-7 the entire time. Didn't score in the second half. Came back, had to score in overtime. It was insane. They scored late in the fourth quarter, I think, and then scored in overtime, and that was it. Oklahoma State got the football to start the second overtime. They scored. They got the two-point conversion. Arkansas couldn't do it. Game over. That was it. Oklahoma State walks out with a win. And you hate it for Pittman. You really do. You hate it for those guys. Because Talen Green's a really good quarterback, man. And that Arkansas team played fairly well. They played good enough to win, I'll tell you that. But they just did what Arkansas does. And they found a way to lose. Rather than like Alabama did and found a way to win, Arkansas found a way to lose. But that's different than what happened with Auburn, because Auburn didn't play well enough to win. Not anywhere close. But if you watch that Arkansas-Oklahoma State game, the Hogs played just fine. They just had some bad decisions, bad coaching, bad execution. That word's been used a lot this week. And they couldn't find a way to get it done. Arkansas pulled an Arkansas. And I think Pittman had a chance to save his job. And texting with my buddy Ty over at ESPN Arkansas, they're coming here in just a couple of weeks, next week, right? That game probably has a chance to be pretty close. Because Arkansas is better than people gave them credit for, myself included. But my goodness, what a heartbreaker that was there in Stillwater. Got a text that says, Bama, as of right now, at Wisconsin this week, 16.5-point favorite with a total of 50.5. I don't know how to feel about that, to be completely honest. That's the first time I've seen a line. Yeah, ESPN has 16, so 16.5, wherever you want to lie on that. Interesting. That seems like a lot of points. Again, on the road, it's big noon kickoff, 11 a.m. Wisconsin's going to be ready, and they've played terrible football through the first 2 weeks. But if Wisconsin plays well, they can run with Bama. They can hang with them. But if Bama plays well, Wisconsin can't hang with them. Does that make sense? I don't know. I'm going to have to sit on that one for a little bit. 16.5. With 50.5 for the total for Bama at Wisconsin. We'll talk more about that as the week goes on. I want to hear from you, though. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Biggest winner, biggest loser from week two of college football. I kind of gave you mine right there, other than the obvious. And more on that when we come back. Plus, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is going to come with us and join us in just a few minutes. We'll talk to him about the Georgia Bulldogs on the road at Lexington. Maybe we'll start looking at some of the Week 3 college football games. We got more of that coming here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you being with us. And a reminder that Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will be with us coming up in the next segment. And stick around in hour number two. Daryl Dapperich will be with us from 3:15 to 3:45, talking all things Auburn athletics. And, you know, big reactions from week two. A lot of big results. And there were some good games, right? And I guess the narrative now that I've tried to tell you about is games that don't look as good on paper are becoming better each and every season. And it's because of the obvious. You know what they are. NIL and transfer portal, right? Two things we've talked about. We mention those two words every day on the airwaves because it's impossible not to, because of the impact and the role that they have in college athletics. But just look at, look at last week. Look at what happened here. You had teams like South Florida who kept it close with Alabama. You had Northern Illinois who went in and beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame. You had Bowling Green who almost beat Penn State. You had games like this where all of a sudden, it's not all that crazy. And that's what I'm trying to say here. Not every team, not every program, and not every game. But more and more as we go, you see results like this. You see the fact that if you're not careful, South Dakota will run for four quarters with Wisconsin. That's how this is working here. And so it's going to be a major adjustment for me personally. And you, I'm sure a lot of you feel this same way with what I'm about to say here. But it's going to be really, really hard for me to look at a game and say, and not, let me rephrase this. It's going to be hard for me to look at a game and not write it off because of who's playing, because of the matchup, because it's not a big name or a bigger name in college football. And take, for example, the first game tomorrow night in college football, Arizona State on the road at Texas State. First of all, that's weird, right? That's weird. So it kind of catches your eye. And then all of a sudden, you look at the betting line. For those of you that are into that type of thing for entertainment purposes only, Arizona State is favored by 1.5. Is that not odd to you? If the betting stuff wasn't there, I would have kept on scrolling. I would have looked right past, Arizona State, got it. All right, they played Texas State. Boring, right? That's boring. It used to be. It used to be boring because we used to overlook those games because there was never a chance where Arizona State was outmatched or evenly matched with a Texas State coming in. And I guess I said that backwards. There was never a day where Texas State was matched up evenly with an Arizona State. You see what I'm saying here? Friday, UNLV in Kansas. All right, whatever, fine. Kansas will probably win. They'll probably blow them out, yada, yada. They're favored by a touchdown. That's it. That's it. There's a ranked game on Friday night. How about that? Arizona and Kansas State. What do you know? A top 20 game on a Friday night, 7 o'clock on Fox. How about that? Didn't know that. So it's going to take a lot for me to fully accept the fact that good games can be everywhere now. And it doesn't have to be big team versus big team or little team versus little team. It can be a smaller program versus a bigger program. Now, I don't know how you decipher that. I don't know how you predict which ones are going to be good and which ones are not. I think it's harder to do that now than it's ever been before. But man, we got some good football this weekend. Bama at Wisconsin, LSU South Carolina. Apparently, that's the best matchup in college football. It's where College Game Day is going. Those two get SEC, well, LSU gets SEC play started. South Carolina opened up with a big SEC win on the road to Kentucky. Nobody had that. Nobody had that. I mean, there's not great games this weekend. Memphis, Florida State, okay. Remember the Noles? Yeah, they're still looking for their first win this season. That's exciting for them, I guess. Boston College and Missouri, that doesn't look good, but remember, Boston College is a top 25 team thanks to the newest AP poll. Tell me that's not gross. Oregon and Oregon State, Tulane, Oklahoma, Notre Dame coming off an embarrassing loss. Now they're on the road at Purdue. How about this game? Battle of the 1-1s, Texas A&M and Florida. Do we have any idea what that game's going to look like? I couldn't tell you. A&M's favored by 3.5. I wouldn't touch it. Absolutely not. Would not touch it because I don't know. Only thing we know about A&M is their loss was to Notre Dame, who just got beat by Northern Illinois. And Florida has got Lagway back there slinging it. So maybe he's going to do something. Maybe he revives the Florida program. I don't know. That's what I'm saying, man. There's all sorts of good stuff going in here this weekend. So don't let anybody tell you that the games aren't exciting this weekend. I think they are. I think they're intriguing, and there will be a game that we're not prepared for that we probably won't talk about that'll be one of the craziest ones of the week. I'm just saying it. It's going to happen. Hey, it could be right here on the plains. You never know. Well, speaking of those that could be exciting, but maybe not as much anymore, Georgia on the road at Kentucky, and we'll talk to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 about that game and how the Dogs are 2-0. Stick around. Jordan Hill joins us after this.
Are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and joining us on the phone lines, he's with us this time, this day, every single week. It's Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He covers the Georgia Bulldogs for the 24/7 sports site over in Athens. Jordan, great to have you on the show once again, my man. Hope things are going well.
Yeah, things are great. You know, it feels like we finally got the fall weather over here in Athens. Getting ready for the first true road trip of the season with Georgia going up to Kentucky. So things are good. Things are starting to cool off, and I, for one, am definitely glad to see it.
Well, I'm sure Kirby Smart is saying a lot of the same things as the Dogs are 2-0, of course, with the blowout win in week one against Clemson. And then they were able to back it up. We knew it would be a tough test, but they were able to get it done against the Golden Eagles of Tennessee Tech. 48-3, a final score for Georgia. Look, I'm not going to ask you to go in and tell how Georgia really just took it to Tennessee Tech. But any kind of trends or anything that you saw in this game that you think are noteworthy?
Well, I think just what we've seen in the first 2 weeks of this defense, back-to-back games where they've only given up 3 points, and it's three games in a row if you count the Orange Bowl back in December when they did that against Florida State. I think this defense has a chance to be really special. And then really the only other thing I thought of note coming out of Tennessee Tech was first game for Trevor Etienne. I thought he looked really good, had about 78 rushing yards, broke out off a really impressive 45-yard run. I think Georgia's really excited about the running backs they have. It feels like the last couple of years they've had productive backs, but it's not really been first team SEC, you know, all conference caliber running backs. I think they're really excited about this group, and Trevor Etienne's going to head them up. He looked good in his first game, and I expect more of the same going forward.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Etienne. I noticed that he did play and seemed to have a pretty solid game. Any sort of rust that he had to knock off? And if so, do you think he did that? I mean, do you think he's ready to go for the rest of this season?
Definitely. And no, I didn't really think it looked like he had much rust to knock off. I thought he played well. Caught a couple passes, too, which I think is probably what I'm the most intrigued about with him. How much is Carson Beck going to throw to him out of the backfield? But definitely liked what we saw from him. And then probably as big for Georgia in the run game against Tennessee Tech, Branson Robinson. He had a really slow start against Clemson. It seemed like he was a little hesitant. Again, that was his first game. Coming back from a torn patellar tendon, I thought he looked much more of himself against Tennessee Tech. Granted, you know, we understand the caliber of the opponent, but I think he feels a lot more comfortable with a couple games under his belt. And Georgia's going to rely on Branson to take some significant carries this year. And what I saw on Saturday makes me feel like he's ready to do that.
Georgia quarterbacks went 28 of 37 against Tennessee Tech, and I say it that way because Carson Beck went 18 of 25 for 242 and 5 touchdowns, but Gunnar Stockton got in a little bit there as well, and he went 10 for 12 with almost 100 yards. What'd you see from, of course, Carson Beck doing Carson Beck things, but the backup, Stockton, getting in a little bit as well?
Definitely, and starting with Carson, tied a program record with 5 passing touchdowns in that game. I think he's the 8th Georgia player, Georgia quarterback, to do that. So that was definitely something to note. And Gunnar Stockton, you know, I think he did a really good job. He's a guy that I feel like is feeling more and more comfortable when he's put in these situations. This is his first year as Georgia's backup quarterback. I think the games we've seen of him in the past, you could kind of see those moments get to him, and understandably so, you know, the pressure of being out there. I think he looks so much more comfortable, and Kirby talked about that after the game. Gunnar Stockton's a guy that when you look to the future, you know, 2025, he's going to be the front runner to win that quarterback job. There will be a competition for sure, but definitely good signs from him against Tennessee Tech, and we'll see, you know, if there are mop-up duty situations for him going forward, what he's able to do in those moments.
And speaking of backup Georgia quarterbacks, he's no longer at Georgia. He was the starter this Saturday for the Wildcats in Lexington when South Carolina came to town. Brock Vandegrift, man, not a good performance for that young man. 3 out of 10, 30 yards, 1 interception. Jordan, his QBR was 1.2 against South Carolina before he got replaced. That's not all that hot.
Yeah, that you want to have a low score in something like golf. I don't think you want that in QBR. And yeah, it was just a really rough performance. And honestly, that was probably the biggest surprise to me of the second week of the SEC. Just not only the fact Kentucky lost to South Carolina, but it got manhandled. And you look at Brock Vandegrift, when you include his rushing stats, which, of course, stack yardage is part of it, he produced 1 yard of offense between the 30 yards and then minus 29 rushing yards. A rough go of it, and you know, I'll give Ben Wolk, my coworker, credit. He pointed it out that this is about the worst setup before Brock. You go from losing and having a really poor game to play in the team that knows you better than anybody else. Mm. He spent the last couple of years at Georgia. They know his strengths and his weaknesses. This is going to be a really rough go of it. Last I saw, it looks like it's also going to rain in Lexington on Saturday night, which isn't going to be exactly conducive to throwing the ball. So Brock is going to have the cards stacked against him, but he is a really talented quarterback. I know he's better than he played against South Carolina. We'll see if he can bounce back against really good defense.
That's a really good point, just thinking about the fact that, Kirby Smart and the defensive mind that coaching staff has. I mean, they watched him in practice enough to know his trends, to know what he's going to do. They obviously don't know a ton about the Kentucky offense. They didn't give you a ton last Saturday to try and figure out, but has Kirby Smart talked about that at all this week? I don't remember when his weekly press conferences are, so he had a chance to talk about what Brock could bring against his Georgia defense?
Kirby was very coy, and I think that was by design when he was asked about Brock Vandegrift. I asked Kirby specifically what his strengths were, and Kirby said, don't really know that. You know, it's kind of on Kentucky to figure out how to utilize him and to play to his strengths. But I think there was purpose behind that. I think Kirby was kind of holding back a little bit. He understands that a lot of this game is going to depend on how Brock Vandegrift plays against his former team. He knows Brock's going to be fired up. But like we said, nobody knows his tendencies better than Kirby Smart and this Georgia staff.
Georgia on the road at Kentucky this weekend, 6:30 on television is ABC. The Dogs, as of right now, are favored by 24 points. ESPN gives them a 92.4% chance to win in Lexington. Talking to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's with us every Wednesday here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. If the weather is bad, and Kentucky can be a tough-ish place to play if the fans are involved and the team is playing well. I mean, what does it take for Georgia to go in and, yes, get the win, but just kind of get in and get out, take care of business?
Well, especially if the weather's an issue, I'm looking at Georgia's run game. You know, it's been a situation the first 2 weeks. They really haven't needed them to do a whole lot. And they've had their moments. I mentioned that Trevor Etienne run in week two. Nate Frazier had a really strong game in week one against Clemson. I want to see, especially if the weather is bad, can they rely on that run game, count on those guys to make plays? And I mean, the biggest thing, and it goes week to week, but especially when you have to factor in the weather, is just Georgia winning the turnover battle. And that's part of what the issue was for Kentucky against South Carolina, some really tough turnovers in that game. Again, it's going to be a situation where if you're Georgia, you'd really love sunshine and clear skies because you feel good about having the upper hand in terms of talent. Kentucky would probably love to see a monsoon there at Kroger Field. Because that would definitely muddy up the water a little bit and try to make a big swing in a game that Georgia's over a 3-touchdown favorite.
Just got a text in our on-the-line text box here on ESPN, and it asks, can Jordan tell us the names that we need to know on defense for Georgia through the first 2 weeks? So I'm going to hand that off to you, my friend. Names to know on the Georgia defense through the first 2 weeks of the season.
Well, I'd start with the two starting inside linebackers, C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson. Those are the two younger linebackers alongside Smile Mundon. Two guys that are just sophomores, have played outstanding in their first two games of their sophomore season. C.J. Allen's a guy that stepped in for an injured Jermon Dumas Johnson last year. Did a really good job at the end in November and December and I think he's really grown from there. But Raylan Wilson got a little bit more athletic than C.J. Allen, a little bit leaner. He's looked outstanding, and he's a guy that didn't play quite as much as a freshman, but has shown that he's up to the challenge. Then the other name I throw out there is a guy that I think all SEC fans know well, and Malachi Starks, an All-American, a guy that's already set to have that kind of status again. He's played great. I think he's a future first-round pick. I hate to bring this up for Auburn fans, but if y'all remember, he had the game-sealing interception in that game in Jordan-Hare Stadium last year. So those are probably the three main guys to watch on this defense, three guys that they count on quite a bit. They've made really a lot of plays through 2 weeks, and I'm expecting more of the same going forward.
When you look around the SEC, and again, I know we're only 2 weeks in, but I feel like we've learned so much about so many of these different programs around this conference so far. When you look around the SEC, Jordan, outside of Athens, of course, what have you learned about the teams that are upcoming on Georgia's schedule and maybe some of the ones that could be competing with Georgia near the end of this season to win the SEC?
Well, I feel like through 2 weeks, I feel pretty good about my prediction that it's going to be Georgia and Texas in the SEC title game. You know, Texas looked great against what I do think is a Michigan team that's not as good as last year, but I really like how Texas is playing on both sides of the ball. Other than that, you know, Ole Miss has been impressive, albeit against two inferior opponents. And I'm sure this has been a big conversation for you guys, Jacob. I mean, I have huge questions about the Auburn offense. You know, it's just very, very disappointing performance from Peyton Thorne against Cal. I thought that, Georgia would still be favored and be able to beat Auburn in Sanford Stadium. Georgia's had a lot of success against Auburn in Athens, but very disappointed to see that Peyton hasn't been able to take a step forward. Still, just 1 week, obviously he can right the ship, but that definitely hurts Auburn's chances to what I thought was, you know, take a step forward in year two and maybe win about 8 games when it was all said and done.
Yeah, you used to be an Auburn guy. I got to ask you, I mean, what's your suggestion, right, if they hand you the head coach headset and they, all right, Jordan Hill, you got to make a decision for Auburn football and the future of the program. What happens this Saturday? Who starts at quarterback?
You know, I'd still start Peyton Thorne. I do think he's your best bet, but I think it's going to be a situation where you start him, and if we get a quarter in and nothing looks better, you got to hand it off to Hank Brown. It's a situation where Peyton's played long enough, you know what he can do and what he cannot do. And eventually you got to think about your status leading the program if you're Hugh Freeze. You got to provide some hope. You got to provide some progress. So I'd start Peyton. I would say, you know, let's see how he responds, because there are going to be quarterbacks that have rough days. It's part of the sport. And we were talking about a few minutes ago with Brock Vandegrift. But, I'd start Peyton with the understanding that you've got a backup that you've prepared. And if it's not going well, you got to turn to him.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7. Just want to remind fans before we let you go that this Georgia schedule doesn't have a whole lot of breaks in it, so don't jump on them too much for taking on Tennessee Tech. At Kentucky this weekend, they'll get an early bye week in week four. Then they're at Alabama. Auburn comes to town. They'll get Mississippi State before they play at Texas, play Florida, at Ole Miss, and Tennessee, who looked really, really good. I mean, that schedule's about to ramp up for Kirby Smart and the Dogs.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's going to be a tough schedule, and it's one of those things right before the season. During the summer, I had picked Georgia to go undefeated, and just the more I looked at it, it's an absolute gauntlet, especially when you consider the majority of their toughest games are on the road. So I have Georgia going 11-1. A loss to Texas. Yeah, I mean, it's up there with one of the toughest schedules. I'd still say Florida's is tougher, but Georgia's got a heck of a schedule. And, there's not a whole lot of Tennessee Techs put on the schedule along as the further you go on in the season.
Jordan, looking forward to watching the Dogs play this Saturday night against Kentucky. Maybe the Cats will keep it close. I doubt it, but maybe, you never know. And then I'm excited to get you back on the show next week to talk about it. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, tell the people where they can find you and all of your fantastic coverage.
Appreciate that. Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. So, yeah, excited to get this thing started with SEC play, a big road trip, and Georgia's a big favorite, but we'll go up there and see if they can take care of business.
Awesome, man. Are you going to make the trip up to Lexington?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll be up there and probably wearing a poncho or something if the weather winds up playing out like they're saying.
Is that the stadium that has an open press box?
That one does not. I will not be upset if that's the case as far as the weather.
Okay, got it. Well, hey, safe travels to you, my friend. We'll have you on the show again next week.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks so much. Jordan Hill of Dogs247. Check him out, dogs247.com. We'll take our final break in hour number one. Come back, wrap it up, get into hour number two. And a reminder that Daryl Dapperidge will be joining us at 3:15 from Locked On Auburn and Auburn Daily. He's with us at 3:15. Until then, though, phone lines are open. You can wrap up hour number one or start hour two with me, whichever you want to do. 334-321-1390. Back after this to wrap up hour number one.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Thanks to Jordan Hill, as always, man. He's so much fun to talk to and get caught up on Georgia athletics, Georgia football. I hate that Kentucky looked so bad last week because I was kind of excited about the game this weekend for Georgia and Kentucky. No, I was not going to pick Kentucky because I've done that for like 4 years in a row and they have embarrassed themselves and me every year. But I was at least hoping it was somewhat tough for Georgia, and I just don't think so. I think they're going to have an absolute field day on their former quarterback, Brock Vandegrift. Got a few minutes here before we wrap up hour number one, and got a text in the on-the-line text box, and we're going to have more thoughts on this coming up in hour two. Going to start getting into my thoughts on the quarterback battle debate for Auburn going into week three. But got a text that says, how will the student section react if they announce Peyton Thorne as the starting QB versus Hank Brown? I'll take it a step further. How will the entire stadium react if they announce Peyton Thorne as the starting QB over Hank Brown? And I'm curious on if they do it with the video, right? If they do it with the video on the big video board, or if they truly wait until the first drive of the game. Have you noticed that a lot of the defensive guys have been shown on the video board, right? We got the very first depth chart, right? And it said or. Everybody was or. It was Eugene Asante or Austin Keys or whoever, right? And a lot of the times on the video board, they would show numerous guys, more than the 11 starters that are allowed on the football field. So I'm curious if Auburn decides to put Peyton Thorne and Hank Brown in the video. They don't put either one of them in the video. I don't know. It's something you would, as a head coach, you probably wish you didn't have to deal with. And I'll be honest, I wish you didn't have to deal with that. It's like, man, I got to think about all that kind of stuff, right? I have to think about all of this, what video we're going to play, what 5-second clip we're going to play on the video board 30 minutes before kickoff. Come on, man. But it's a good piece of interaction. It's a good piece of the pregame. I like it. I'm just speaking in terms of the coaching staff. But let's say, just for whatever reason, we don't know until the starting quarterback runs out there on Saturday. We don't know. They don't put it in the video. They announce them both, whatever the case may be. And we truly don't know who it's going to be until snap one offensively for Auburn on Saturday. If it's Peyton Thorne that jogs out there, the stadium will boo. I don't think it'll be everybody. I don't think all 87,000 fans are going to lose their minds and start boo-birding him. Wow, that was tough. But I don't think he's going to get a warm reception, right? I don't think they're going to clap for him and welcome him and be excited to see him, which is very, very reactionary for fans, because almost everybody has turned on Peyton Thorne. It's Wednesday right now. It's Wednesday, and I've still yet to hear one single person, other than, I guess, Jordan. Right? Jordan Hill was saying he would start Peyton Thorne. But I've yet to hear one singular Auburn person tell me that they believe Peyton Thorne should start on Saturday. I've yet to see it. I've yet to hear it. I've yet to read it. everybody's turned on him. Everybody has decided, nope, we're done. We're writing him off. That's it. If you're going to start a new quarterback, may as well do it against New Mexico. He's had his chances. He started for 4 years in Power 4 football. If he doesn't get it now, he'll never get it. Right? It's kind of like a basketball team in March. If you make the same mistakes in March that you did in November, if you ain't good now, you're not going to be good in the next few weeks. You know what I mean? So I feel that if Peyton Thorne jogs out there Saturday night, really, the crowd's not going to be happy. The student section is going to let him have it, for sure. There may be some calmer fans outside of that side of the stadium, but, oh, goodness. I think if you're trying to appeal to the fan in the stadium, listening on radio, watching on TV, yeah, you run out Hank Brown. But is that what Hugh Freeze is going to do? Will he do it? I don't know. I'll give you more of my thoughts coming up in hour number two. Plus, Daryl Dapridge from Locked On Auburn. He'll give us his thoughts. Don't you worry. All that coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. And man, we're having a lot of fun doing that today. If you missed any of hour number one, you know where to find the podcast version of the show. We just take the audio, post it on our website so you can go back and listen to it. If you miss anything from the show, any guest, any audio, any crazy rants that we may be going on, you can check all of those out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also find our SEC football challenge there, as well as we are getting into week three of college football. So would love to get you in on that. You can check that out at ESPNAU.com as well. In hour number one, we talked about week two of college football, right? Kind of gave our overall reactions to week two of college football since the first 2 days of the week were just so heavy on Auburn. And we're getting into more of that here in hour number two. But we talked about all the winners, losers, things like that from week two. We also talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. As Georgia heads to Lexington to take on the Cats this weekend. So all of that was in hour number one. Coming up here in hour number two, in about 12 minutes or so, Daryl Dapridge, Locked On Auburn, will be joining us on the show. Double D Wednesdays. Excited for him. He'll be with us for 30 minutes today. So really looking forward to that. We'll get his thoughts from this past weekend and ultimately his answer to the million-dollar question. Who should start at quarterback this weekend? And we were talking about this a little bit to end hour number one because we got a text in the On the Line text box. You can get in on that as well, 334-784-1067. Also, your thoughts. You can ask anything you want me to ask Daryl. You can text me there. I'll try to get that into to him, and we can try to do our best for that. But got a text in there to start hour number, or I guess to end hour number one. And it was asking about the reaction of the fan base inside the stadium on Saturday. This coming Saturday with New Mexico, 6:30 kick. What will the reaction be of the student section and then all the fans as a whole? What will their reaction be if Peyton Thorne jogs out as the starter this Saturday? I think they're going to be disappointed. I don't think that's a very crazy thing to say. I think they'll be disappointed. Now, whether that's the right way to feel or not, that's up to you. That's up to your interpretation. I do believe that if you are an Auburn fan, whether you are at the game, tailgating, at home, watching, listening, whatever the case may be, here's what I don't want you to fall into. This is the trap I don't want you to fall into, okay? I don't want you to actively cheer against Peyton Thorne if he's the starter this Saturday. Do not cheer against Peyton Thorne on Saturday. Because that doesn't help anybody. That doesn't help anything. I understand that there's a large chunk of you right now that don't believe in him anymore. Maybe some of you didn't believe in him before the season started, and props to you. But what we don't want to slip into is cheering for somebody to fail that represents your team in hopes that there's a change and in hopes that it gets better down the road. You see what I'm saying here? That's not what we're looking for. And I know it brings up the difficult path that Christian and I were getting into yesterday of, okay, what if Peyton Thorne looks great on Saturday? It's New Mexico. Do we really learn a whole lot there? No, you don't. You don't learn anything with that. Because if Thorne goes out there Saturday and lights it up, okay, he did that 2 weeks ago against a bad defense. So what? Which leads me to my point. It leads me to where I stand. My answer on the most pressing question this week. I believe, Jacob Goins, I believe that this Saturday, Auburn against New Mexico, I think Hank Brown should be the starter. I think Hank Brown should start on Saturday against New Mexico. Because like I said, starting Peyton Thorne doesn't do you a whole lot of good. If he plays bad, then sure, I guess you have your definite answer, but the odds are that's not going to happen. Arizona put 60-plus points on this New Mexico team. Okay? They're not good. Defensively, that is. Offensively, they pose a threat, and that's something we have to talk about as the week goes on. We may be able to get into that with Double D coming up in just a little bit. But defensively, they're bad. And so Peyton Thorne lighting it up, even if it's for the first half, and then you put Hank Brown in, okay, that doesn't do you a whole lot of good, because guess what? If both quarterbacks play this Saturday, starting with Peyton Thorne and then to Hank Brown, then you go into the Arkansas game, and we're right back in the same situation. Because both quarterbacks are going to play well, whoever plays this weekend. They're both going to do well. So then you go into the Arkansas game, and it's, well, who do we start? It's SEC play. Who do we start? Do we go with the guy that's played legitimate snaps before or not? Right? That's the conversation. And to be honest, I don't want to have that conversation this time next week. A week from now, I don't want to have this same talk. And I've got to think that Hugh Freeze and this staff feel the exact same way. So you go into a game like this against New Mexico, you limit the package, you limit the offensive playbook, you make it as simple as possible for Hank Brown. That says nothing against him or his IQ. That's just what Hugh Freeze said he was going to do. You limit the package, you start Hank Brown, and you see how it goes. Some of you may say, okay, what if Hank Brown lights it up? Does that really tell us anything? Does that say anything against New Mexico, this terrible defense you just talked about? A little bit, yeah, because it's a different story. Because we know the ups and downs of Peyton Thorne. We know he can ball out against bad teams. But we also know what happens when he plays good competition. It doesn't go well. We don't know anything about Hank Brown other than he lit up the second and third string defenders for Maryland in the bowl game for a couple of drives. but I'm not hanging anything on that. Okay, I'm not even counting that in my brain. If anything, it shows us, okay, he can at least execute whatever this new offense looks like or this limited offense that Hugh Freeze is going to send into this game or take into this game, rather. Gives him reps, gives him opportunities, gives him some comfortability. And I think this also allows the receivers to get their stuff together too. And that's not the word I wanted to use, because they're not playing a perfect game. They were open Saturday. A lot of them were. A lot of the time they were open. But they're not playing perfect either. So it's not just on the quarterback. In this case, Peyton Thorne. You've got offensive line issues. You still have receiver issues a little bit. Nothing crazy, but stuff that needs to be fixed. And Auburn needs to figure out what type of offense they want to be. They need to find their identity. And it's week three. It may be hard to do that, and it may be difficult to do that against New Mexico. But this team needs to figure out what they're going to be, how they're going to do it, and they need to figure it out right now. Are you going to throw 50 times a game? Are you going to wait till the second half to use Jarquez Hunter? Or are you going to lean on the run first and throw when you have to? Are you going to be 50-50? Are you going to be the 60-40 that Hugh Freeze talked about, where he wants to average 6, 7, 8 yards a carry? Is that who you're going to be? Then you need to figure it out. And I think it's important for us to say that when we come into this studio on Monday afternoon, however the game goes on Saturday for Auburn, if it's a blowout victory, they put up 800 yards and they've scored 60 points, we need to not overreact. We need to not go absolutely crazy. We can digest and break down the quarterback play, whoever it is, the offensive game planning, the execution, the route running, the ball catching, the, I guess, the validity of the offense, if you will. We can break that down to an extent. But we cannot do what we did after week one. And I take responsibility for that just as much as anybody else does. We cannot be blinded again. And that's not even the word I want to look or use. I don't know what I'm looking for, but we can't jump the gun again. But in my opinion, my take on this, and I'll defend it until Saturday and then we'll see how it goes. If I'm Hugh Freeze, I start Hank Brown this Saturday. I think it's the best option. On the flip side, and I know we got to get to break, Double D joins us coming up in a few minutes. On the flip side, and God, I hope this doesn't happen, you put in Hank Brown and it just doesn't go well. It's just bad, right? What if that happens? If that's the case, then Auburn's in trouble. Auburn is in trouble if Hank Brown can't get it done on Saturday if he starts. And then you've got a whole lot bigger problems. And we'll get into that as we go. All right, let's get to our first break here in hour number one. Daryl Dapridge from Locked On Auburn, Auburn Daily, Montgomery radio legend. He joins us coming up next for his 30-minute segment as he does every Wednesday, Double D Wednesday. Coming up next here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
It's that time, it's that time, it's Double D Wednesday with Daryl Dapridge. He joins us on ESPN 106.7. My man, Daryl, how are you, brother? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday to you. We are halfway through the week, so this is great. Whew. I always get to mark my week by that, by knowing that I'm coming on with you.
That's right,
so
man.
We're getting close.
That's right. Well, I mean, there's so much to get to today, and I was telling you just on the phone before we came on the air, I just gave my answer to what is the biggest question around town so far. We're going to get to your answer coming up in just a little bit. Everybody, if you don't know Daryl, I don't know what you've been doing. He's a Montgomery radio legend. He's on Locked on Auburn, the daily podcast with Zach Blackerby a couple days a week. Also in his writing era as well, and he's just got a whole lot going on with message boards and recruiting. I mean, this guy's all over the place, so be sure you check him out wherever you get your podcast and all of that good stuff. So, Daryl, before we get into what's coming up this Saturday and all of the things that we need to get to there, we got to rewind a little bit because I got to get your takes here on the radio airwaves about what happened a week ago, I guess less than a week ago, when Auburn let Cal come in and beat them inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Well, I think that sometimes we can over, you know, simplify things and look at a couple different areas. Like a lot of people, that predicted or looked at this game, I got a lot of that wrong based upon thinking that Auburn had turned the corner from an offensive standpoint and that I probably didn't give Cal as much credit as I should have. I did watch, you know, some of their game, and I did look at their roster. And I did realize it was very senior-laden, and they had some transfers. But I just thought with Ott being gimpy, and I just really wasn't sold that Mendoza, their sophomore quarterback, could beat Auburn and could make the plays. And to his credit, he did. So we can break down film. We can talk about, you know, what happened in the first half. We can talk about missed opportunities. But at the end of the day, with Cal coming in and playing pretty well in Jordan-Hare Saturday, Auburn cannot afford to turn the ball over five times. You're not going to beat anybody. I mean, and to do that and to lose by a touchdown just goes to show you that even a, you know, average offensive performance and taking care of the football, and we could have had a different outcome Saturday. But those things being said, I think they're defensively in the first half. Auburn did some things that allowed Cal to get out in front at halftime. The third down conversions were atrocious. I think Cal hit on their first six, and it wasn't like Mendoza wasn't flushed from the pocket. He was able to extend plays. He was able to keep his eyes downfield, and Auburn's defensive backs in the first half were just not playing the ball very well. And they allowed, you know, third down, could not get off the field. And that's detrimental. They were not setting the edge. They weren't doing the containment, the rushing lanes had no integrity. There was a lot of different things. They corrected that in the second half. They got it fixed. But at that point, you know, Auburn's offense was struggling and turning it over for a variety of reasons, which we'll go into deeper from the quarterback standpoint. But that's a recipe for disaster. People want to talk about how great the defense played in the second half, and I get it. They did. I mean, you give up 21 points and 323 yards, you think you have a chance to win, but yet Auburn did not. So that's where we are right now.
I got a text yesterday in our on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067, and somebody was asking me, why did it take Auburn to go to the locker room to make the defensive adjustments? Like, why did they have to wait until the second half to make those adjustments? Because in terms of time of possession, Daryl, the damage was done.
Oh, great point. I mean, you can keep them out of the end zone. You know, let's be real. Cal missed a chip shot 29-yard field goal
right
in the first quarter as well. But how Auburn responded to that was to turn it right back over again. And you just cannot afford to do that. You caught a huge break there. You got to capitalize. Time of possession, a lot of times stats don't tell the story. But when you look at third down conversions, time of possession, and the turnover ledger, it tells the story. And I think, you know, Auburn, to their credit defensively, they were on the field a lot. Auburn's offense had a lot of three and outs, a lot of two and outs because of the turnovers. And you get put in a position where even with all those things, me and you are standing at the on the sidelines with 2.5 minutes to go at Auburn at their own 40 with an opportunity to drive for a game-tying touchdown. You turn it over again. Mm-hmm. So the opportunities were there. Time of possession was a huge I mean, I just could not believe how, and that is a direct result of extending plays and not being able to get off the field third down in the first half. I think if Auburn would have done what they should have done in the first half defensively, obviously throughout the game, that time of possession thing tilts a little bit more evenly because they just could not get off the field on third down. And they did get a couple sacks in the second half, but, you know, not minus seven through two games on the turnover ledger, I mean, that's just not going to get it done. And you gave yourself a really – you put your defense in some bad situations, short fields, without being able to get any of that yourself. So, yeah, there were a lot of things about that that were very ugly. Now, the turnover thing, the interceptions. You
yes.
know, people are saying, well, out of the four, two were Peyton Thorne's fault, two were not. I think the ball that he got hit when he was releasing it that got picked off, you still have to put on him because he held on to the ball too long. He had hot route. He had he had guys underneath with drags and that he could have thrown the ball to with under routes, and he didn't, and he held on to it and locked on downfield, and because of that, he got hit. So if you get rid of the ball quicker there, you don't get hit, and that's on the quarterback. So there's a lot of things from a progression standpoint that he could have done differently that I think needs to get cleaned up if he wants to maintain the job at quarterback at Auburn.
Yeah, that was the thing I've gone back to time and time again, and I know you've gone and watched the Aaron Murray video, and that may be the biggest video that dude's ever done. He's on radio shows all over the state now where he was breaking down the film from Peyton Thorne, and it's like, man, you just watch it, and they're running open everywhere. And you were sitting there next to me Saturday night in the press conference, and I asked Hugh Freeze about what the move going forward is on the quarterback room, and he said, look, I got to watch the film. And then I asked him again on Monday, or it got asked to him again on Monday about that, and he changed his answer. He changed the tone of how he was talking, and sounds like it's coming down to what happens this week in practice. But my problem with that, Daryl, is Hugh Freeze has told us all season and all offseason long that Peyton Thorne's been the best one in practice.
Well, I think that what he said today on the teleconference about, you know, after looking at the film, there'll be a change if this continues. He sees the problem. Now, remember, he also said that he was going to cut up about, well, he said this in the press conference, he had about 15 plays
right
that he had pulled and cut up on a reel, and he was going to go over those plays with Hank and Peyton. Some intel on that, and some people that are in the know on that, is that it was more like a psychological exam. You know, he sat there with Thorne and said, tell me why you did this, show me this. With Hank, what would you do in this situation? You know, rapid fire stuff. It was very mental, that aspect of that meeting. The practice player thing where he came out and said he has a hard time benching a young man that's inferior in practice. Okay, I get that. I mean, but at some point when the lights come on, you have to produce. There are stories and stories and stories about guys that are great practice players, but it doesn't translate. On the flip side of that, nowhere have I ever heard that Hank Brown's not a great practice player.
Sure.
I think he does all the right things in practice. So I don't think that the gap or the gulf is that big between Peyton Thorne and Hank Brown in practice that it's being made out to be. In fact, I've been told that it's not by people I trust that are at practice. I'm not saying Peyton's not a better practice player just because of experience and maybe having a little bit more grasp of what Auburn's doing, but then why do you say you're going to simplify the playbook and reduce that? If you're reducing the playbook and you're simplifying it, it would make sense that you do that for the redshirt freshman, not the fifth-year senior.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of things that encode. I think he's probably, if I had to guess, I know what I would think should happen, but I'm not a head coach. I think that he's going to start Peyton Thorne. Peyton Thorne's going to be on a very, very short leash. But to me, Jacob, who cares? You're playing New Mexico. So, yeah, Peyton Thorne has looked really, really good against lesser opponents. I would expect nothing different against New Mexico's, whose defense is atrocious. So if he goes out there and has just a tremendous first half and, you know, completes 15 of 18 for 250 and two or three touchdowns, What are we really looking at? What are we really gaining from that? It's when adversity hits or we play opponents that are as good or better than Auburn is where the struggle has come. So what are you going to gain? What are you going to you're not. I mean, that's why I think that there's absolutely nothing to lose, and the time to do it to make that change would be Saturday.
Yeah,
for a variety of reasons that we could get into later on.
Yeah, we got about a minute or so before the break. So your prediction is that Peyton Thorne starts. Not necessarily your pick, but your prediction is that he starts Peyton Thorne this Saturday?
It is. I think he's probably looked at some things on film that he thinks Peyton does really well. He feels like there are some situations and some things from a play-calling standpoint, from a scheme standpoint, that they may have asked him to do too much, which in itself is a problem to me.
Sure.
I mean, I don't, you know, and I also
is it a problem on Auburn putting too much on him, or is it a problem in Peyton Thorne not being able to do it?
It's a problem that Peyton Thorne's not able to do it. And I get that he's the better running quarterback, but you know what? Sometimes if you get rid of the ball quicker, you don't have to run. The play doesn't break down and the pocket doesn't get crushed.
Yeah, or just move off your
scramble and extend a broken play.
Yeah,
get rid of the ball quicker and you don't have to.
Move off of your one receiver and go to your second read. It's a miracle. What could happen if you just look somewhere else, right, and don't just stare him down? And that brings up a question that just kind of hit my brain, and I'm going to pose this to you as we're getting to break here. Could Saturday against New Mexico, because Auburn's a 4-touchdown favorite, yes, they're supposed to win. We've been here before, I get that. But if Auburn is supposed to win and they play the way they're supposed to, could this be a litmus test? Could Hugh Freeze and this offensive staff put Peyton Thorne in particular situations to test him one final time? We'll talk about that when we come back as Daryl Dappertz joins us from Locked on Auburn and Auburn Daily here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Plus, we'll break it down and give our picks and predictions for this weekend as well. Daryl Dappertz hanging around with us here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. We got Daryl Dappertz joining us on the phone lines from Locked on Auburn. You can catch his written work as well. He's part of The Barn now, which is a message board, information site. I mean, Daryl, you got a whole lot going on in terms of Auburn athletics, my man.
I do. It seems extremely busy, and it's very encompassing when weeks like this happen, right? I mean, when you've got quarterback controversy and you got, you know, the press conferences that everyone's glued to because wanted to see what Hugh Freeze saw on film. So, yeah, there was a lot to write about and a lot to talk about this week for sure.
Well, I posed the question right before we went to break, and it's one that just kind of hit me, and I think it's really fascinating because you kind of sparked it because you're predicting that Peyton Thorne is the starter this Saturday, and he probably has the leash of the first half. So I ask you this, Daryl. Could Hugh Freeze draw up some sort of offense to where, not to put him in harm's way, not to set him up to fully fail, talking about Peyton Thorne, but to possibly put him in some tricky situations to see how he responds, to see how he reacts, and if he doesn't succeed in that first half based off of Hugh Freeze's little game that he plays, then maybe he could pull him. Do you think that could happen this Saturday?
I don't, only because I think he's actually going the other direction in simplifying things. And I hate to use this word because I don't want it to be taken as a negative connotation, but dumbing things down, reducing the playbook. If he was to do that, I think he would insert some things or try to throw some challenges and put him in situations. I think Hugh Freeze knows that after 14 starts at quarterback at Auburn, or 15 starts, that Peyton Thorne has struggled with adversity except the Cal game last year. I think, you know, Peyton Thorne, when Auburn's rolling and the running game is rolling and they're not keying on him and he has a clean pocket, he looks phenomenal. right? Vanderbilt last year, Arkansas, Mississippi State, a little bit, he struggled a little bit, but the lesser than opponents looks really good. But coming from behind is not his forte. And I think if you do that and play around a little bit and screw around and put him in situations that you want to test his mettle, so to speak, I think that's already been determined. I think Hugh Freeze knows what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are, and is actually going to try to go the other direction if he starts and simplify some things to put him in a position to succeed. Like, for instance, I think you're going to see Auburn run the ball more Saturday than we saw the previous two Saturdays.
As they should.
As they should. And, I mean, I was shocked in the second half how Auburn was able to run it out of the shadow of their own goalpost and that kind of thing. I mean, you have Cobb, Alston, and I've said this all off season when people said Auburn better throw it a ton more effectively and efficiently to do what they want to do and what they want to accomplish. And I said, why would you do that? You're going away from your strengths. You dance with who brung you. And I think Auburn's running back room right now, and Peyton Thorne, to his credit as a runner at the quarterback position, you start to run, especially against Arkansas and Oklahoma. You dare them to stop the run first before you go away from it. You do that even against New Mexico. You say, all right, we're going to come out and we are going to run it down your throat until you stop us. And then throw off of that. New Mexico has a very dynamic quarterback in Dampier, but their defense is not very good. And so Auburn should have its way running the football. But you've got Jeremiah Cobb, Damari Alston, and Jarquez Hunter. I think it's time to utilize them a little bit more, regardless of who the quarterback is, whether it's Hank Brown or Peyton Thorne. And I get that Peyton Thorne's the better runner. But RPO doesn't mean read option. You don't have to have an elite runner at quarterback to make the right decision whether to hand it off or throw it downfield. And Auburn's got a running back room right now that, for me anyway, I'd lean on heavily and say we can gain ball control, time of – you want to – fix that time of possession that was so atrocious last Saturday, Jacob. Run the ball more.
Absolutely.
Knock out some first downs. And then throw off that. And if you throw off that, I'm telling you, you'll have more time and you'll still have receivers open downfield.
It gets into what I was saying to start the second hour before you came on. Is Auburn needs to figure out its offensive identity. What type of team do they want to be? I mean, they obviously wanted to be a pass-heavy team in week one, and they did it. They tried to do it in week two, and it failed. You've got to figure out what that is going into week three and beyond, because you don't want to have to decide that against Arkansas, against Oklahoma. God forbid you try to figure it out on the road against Georgia. I mean, you need to figure out exactly who you are, what your game plan's going to be, and then you can adjust that based off of the opponent here and there. But Auburn's got to figure that out. And Darryl, we've come to the time, you've alluded to this, and I think I know your answer, but who should be the starting quarterback this Saturday for Auburn for them to have the best chance moving forward this season?
Well, let me just address something you said about offensive identity. I think Auburn got duped into thinking that they could be more than what their offensive identity is supposed to be.
And I
don't blame the coaching staff for this. It's, well, you've got all these receivers. You've got these shiny new toys. You're trying to recruit a high-level five-star quarterback into this class. You better show that you can throw it around. I get that. That's like that, you know, it absolutely, you put yourself in that situation, you're kind of picking, it's like poison because you're like, I have to throw it better because these receivers. Instead of just saying, that's not who we are, and it might be who we can be next year, but this year we still need to lean a little bit heavier on the run game. Auburn got duped into that, I think, and I think they got stuckered into that to a certain extent from that mindset that probably will go away. I think Hank Brown, at this point, you've seen what Peyton Thorne is, what his strengths are, what his limitations are, looking at some of the film, where his progressions and where he held onto the ball too long and where it looked like there'd be a little bit of a panic in it. I think you have nothing to lose to play Hank Brown against New Mexico. If this was Arkansas coming up Saturday, would I do it? No. But New Mexico is the perfect opponent from a defensive standpoint to baptize this kid. Throw him into the fire. Let him play. lean heavily on the run, let him throw off play action, have Peyton Thorne sit and watch. Sometimes a veteran quarterback getting pulled, there's a reset button. There's a, you know, there's an absolute wake-up call. Make him watch from the sidelines, and the game slows down. And if Hank Brown comes out, and I wouldn't even play Peyton Thorne in quarter three, I would go Brown, Gurner, White if it was a blowout.
Wow.
If that spread is what we say it is. And then Arkansas, if Hank Brown plays well and does what you think he can do and the offense rolls, I start him against Arkansas. I still rely a little bit on the ground to make sure that he gets acclimated. Then if there's a disaster or Hank Brown struggles, you've got the veteran four-year starter on your bench that you can pull in and draw from and put him into the game, who's already done it to a certain extent.
Yeah. I mean, and let me propose this to you as well. Does that not scare the crap out of you, though, if Hank Brown goes in and doesn't play well against New Mexico, of all teams, whose defense is putrid? We've seen that already this season. Because if that's the case, and I've gotten texts about this all day, I mean, if Auburn puts Hank Brown in as the starter Saturday and it does not go well, Auburn's in deep trouble, Daryl.
Not necessarily, because you've still got the known commodity of Peyton Thorne, who won you six games last year. And if he tightens up some things in film sessions and you rely heavier on the run, could still get you six or seven more this year. What it does do is it shuts up people like me and everybody else that's clamoring for the backup quarterback, and Hugh Freeze can look into the press conference and say, I told you, see, Peyton Thorne was the best option I had. I gave it a shot. I tried playing Hank Brown to go with something different. He's not ready yet. And all that narrative goes away. I suspect if Hank Brown played against New Mexico, no way would he look bad. I'm just telling you. If he played against New Mexico, that defense, Hank Brown looks good against Maryland. Hank Brown looked good against Alabama A&M. New Mexico's defense is a lot worse than Maryland's and not much better than Alabama A&M's. So no way would Hank Brown look bad. I just can't see it, especially if you went some kind of like 60-40 run pass mix. If you let Hank Brown throw it 15 to 20 times and you ran it, I'm telling you, it would look efficient. Auburn could put up 40, 50 points still. Hunter and Austin and Cobb would eat. Coleman probably will not play, so the other receivers like Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons could get back in the mix. New Mexico is the perfect opponent to do this with. And again, it's not because I'm taking New Mexico lightly, because they have a quarterback that can put 20 points on the board against Auburn. But their defense gave up 61 to Arizona. I watched the game. 61 to Arizona. Okay? That same Arizona team went out last week and only scored 22 points against an FCS Northern Arizona alma mater of one Daryl Dapprich, by the way.
Yeah, Arizona's terrible, man. Any school from there is just not they're just not good.
You. Northern Arizona is an FCS school, and Arizona only got 22. So, and New Mexico gave up 60. And I get it. They got Fafina, Torrey McMillan, and all that, but they ain't got the running backs that Auburn does. And so I don't see why you'd have anything to – I think Hank Brown would have a very good game against New Mexico. I think Auburn would score a ton of points, and they wouldn't show a lot when it came to what happened against Arkansas. And then you expand the playbook a little bit for the next week, now that he has his feet wet. But you still, I think, try to run the ball a little bit heavier. Because when you did that against Arkansas last year, you shredded them. Shredded them. And I think, but now look, there's other people have to step up. Fairweather's got to start catching balls out of the backfield.
Yes.
The offensive line's got to quit acting like a bunch of turnstiles and getting Peyton Thorne no time at all. Some of that's not his fault. Missed block assignments, that kind of stuff. All that stuff has got to get cleaned up too.
Well, you brought up the offensive side for New Mexico, and that's where I wanted to go next, because all the talk is, of course, on the quarterback for Auburn. But New Mexico, you said it, they can put up some points, and we saw Auburn's defense have to adjust last week, and then they started playing elite football. How do they have a better week this week than they did a week ago against, I would say, probably a more electrifying offense in New Mexico than what they saw against Cal?
Yeah, a more electrifying quarterback. Dampier has got, he can beat you with his legs and his arm. He is an absolute difficult guy to defend. He's dynamic. So what Auburn's going to have to do is maintain integrity in their rush lanes. Containment's going to be very important, and probably put a spy on Dampier because he can hurt you. He can scramble. He can, when the play breaks down, he can get 20, 30 yards downfield.
Auburn loves Mendoza a good spy, Darryl.
Was a runner that extended the play, right? But he wasn't a runner that just took off and got you 20 or 30.
Sure.
Dampier can. So Auburn's going to have to maintain some, like I said, some rush lane integrity and contain on the outside. Or, you know, he can hurt you. He can hurt you. He's a dynamic dual threat quarterback.
Auburn in New Mexico this Saturday night under the lights in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Everybody's just in anticipation mode at this point. What if this happens? If this happens? I mean, and that's all we can do right now, right? Darryl has asked the what-if questions and react and respond and move on after Saturday night. And you're going to be there, right? You cover this game this weekend. Is that correct?
I will be there.
Beautiful.
Yes, absolutely.
Beautiful.
I think this game's going to go well for Auburn, and maybe a false sense of security will seep back in. But Auburn needs to worry about Auburn Saturday and how they play and getting some things fixed that they have to do before heading into SEC play.
Darryl Dappert's Double D's with us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7. Plug it all, my man. Tell the people where they can find you in all your different outlets.
Wednesdays and Fridays, with Locked on Auburn is a regular show, and then we do the reaction show after the game's over that drops Sunday night. And then I do an article that I write from the press box that gets posted in the barn, the barnauburn.com, the new website message board thing we got going on. And so, yeah, just follow along with that. It should be interesting Saturday. And then we cover the press conference as well. You and I both do. So that some of those nuggets are in that article as well, post-game Saturday.
Awesome, my man. Looking forward to seeing you again this Saturday. Take it easy, and we'll talk to you on the show next week.
All right, man. See you Saturday. Take care.
Thanks so much. That is Darryl Dappert's Double D. He's with us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7 during On the Line. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up before we hand it off to The Drive. That's all coming up on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Darryl Dappert for joining us every Wednesday for 30 minutes, man, 3:15-ish to 3:45-ish. Just kind of depends on what's going on. But we do appreciate him and his time each and every week joining us from Locked on Auburn. And also the barn, the message board, and articles and things like that. So go check him out, and you can check him on social media as well. Got into a lot with Darryl right there, reacting from last weekend, previewing this weekend, and you heard his choice. He predicts it's going to be Peyton Thorne, but his pick is Hank Brown. So got a lot of that from Darryl Dappert. We also talked to Jordan Hill today of Dogs 247 and got his thoughts on Georgia going to Lexington. Yes, going to Kentucky this weekend and taking on their old quarterback, Brock Vandegrift, who was responsible for a single yard of offense last week and had a 1 quarterback rating. It truly was impressive. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in my life. So I got a lot of that from Jordan Hill today, plus a lot of your texts and calls. And I gave my pick on who I think should start at quarterback this weekend for Auburn. All of that on today's show. So be sure, if you missed any of that, you can go and check out the podcast version of the show, ESPNAU.com. I'll post that for you after the show today. You can check that out. Anything that you missed, you can always get it there on our station website. Need to remind you that hour number 2, each and every day, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. So shout out to those guys. They bring you the second hour, 3 to 4, each and every day, here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Check them out at theorthoclinic.com. Auburnnetwork.com. Coming up tomorrow, it's Thursday, jam-packed, you know it is. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us in hour number one. Get his unique perspective on what happened on Saturday and what he believes could happen, what needs to happen, and how Auburn can get out of this hole a little bit. We'll talk to him about that tomorrow. And then to start the second hour tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Auburn High School's head football coach Keith Etheridge will be with us. Excited to have him back on the program because Auburn High School, we're on the road this week for the first time this year at Enterprise. That's right. Auburn is ranked number 4 in 7A. Enterprise, they're ranked number 3. So it's going to be a really good matchup, a huge game early in the season. Auburn High, we're coming off of a dramatic, electrifying, whatever word you want to throw in there, win last week against Opelika. And so we'll have head coach Keith Etheridge joining us at 3 o'clock tomorrow. He will talk about the game last week against Opelika, preview Enterprise, tell you what you need to know as the Tigers are on the road on Friday night. Then Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, will be with us tomorrow as well. Get all of his thoughts around the SEC, Texas dominating, South Carolina winning, Tennessee, are they legit, and does Alabama escape Madison this weekend with the win? So all of that will be on the show tomorrow. And in case you missed it, the announcement for, I guess, not really an announcement, I guess an update, if you will. This coming Friday, all right, so 2 days from now, I will not be here. I will not be in the studio, but the show must go on, right? That's the saying, the show must go on, and it will go on, okay? Friday is going to be Uncle T-Bone, as always. He's here Mondays and Fridays. He'll be here on Friday, and Christian Griffin will be over in the studio. He'll be on this side of it as well. He'll be running the show on Friday, so be sure that you tune in on that. Those guys will do a phenomenal job on Friday because I'll be on the road driving to Enterprise. Jack Hutton and I, Rob Pate, we're all heading down to Enterprise. We're probably going to leave right about 2 o'clock on Friday and head that way for every bit of a two-hour trip, probably closer to 2.5, and so I want to get down there, get there early, all that good stuff. I've heard there's a really good meet and three down there, so I got to go check that out. I've been told that by 4 different people now, so I got to go check that out while we're in Enterprise. So there will be a show on Friday, but it'll be Uncle T-Bone and Christian Griffin, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors, because Lee Scott's at home. Works out well, doesn't it? Lee Scott's at home taking on the Bobcats of Beulah, so you can listen to that on Friday night with Christian Griffin, Rhett Chrome. That game will be on AU100, that's 100.3 FM, on your radio dial on AU100FM.com. Of course, Auburn High School, we're over on Wings 94.3, WingsFM.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Friday night, Tigers taking on Enterprise on the road. So I'll be on the road for that. I'll probably try to call in maybe, something like that on Friday, give a little update on some things. And so that's an outlook on what the rest of the week holds. But I stand by my statement. I do. I stand by my statement. I think Hank Brown should start this Saturday. I think he should. I don't know if he will. I have a feeling he won't. But I don't know. I gotta sleep on that one a little bit more and figure out exactly where I stand on that. But I'm with Daryl, and I'm with a lot of you. I think Hank Brown starting this weekend just makes the most sense. If it works out, you probably stick with him moving forward. If it doesn't, oh boy, you got big trouble, in my opinion. More on that tomorrow, and as the week goes on, I appreciate you being here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Again, if you missed any of it, check out the podcast at ESPNAU.com. Our SEC football challenge is there as well, so be sure you get your picks in for that. Have to be in by midnight on Friday, so be sure you get those in as well, okay? Back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.